she stopped the treatments. In October of this year, however, just as the memory of her nightmare was beginning to fade, M had one episode during which, for no apparent reason, her symptoms flared up again. The timing couldn't have been worse. She had a major acting job just a few days ahead of her, something she could not have carried off in her present state. M contacted the woman and requested the usual treatment, but the woman told her that she was no longer in practice. "I'm sorry," she said, "but I can't do anything for you. I'm not qualified anymore. I've lost my powers. There is someone I can introduce you to, but you'll have to swear absolute secrecy. If you say one word about it to anyone, you'll be sorry. Is that clear?" M was instructed to go to a certain place, where she was brought into the presence of a man with a bluish mark on his face. The man, around 30, never spoke while she was there, but his treatment was incredibly effective. M refused to divulge what she paid for the session, but we can imagine that the consultation fee was quite substantial. This is what we know about the mysterious treatment, as told by M to a trusted, very close friend. She first had to go to a certain hotel, where she met a young man whose job it was to guide her to the healer. They left from a special underground VIP parking lot in a big black car and went to the place where the treatment was performed. As far as the treatment itself is concerned, however, we have been able to learn nothing. M is said to have told her friend, "Those people have awesome powers. Something terrible could happen to me if I broke my promise." M paid only one visit to the place, and she has not since suffered any seizures. We tried approaching M directly for more information on the treatment and the mysterious woman, but, as expected, she refused to see us. According to one well-informed source, this organization generally avoids contacts with the entertainment world and concentrates on the more secretive worlds of politics and finance. Our contacts in the performing arts have, so far, yielded no more information. 13. The Waiting Man. What couldn't be shaken off? No man is an island. 8 o'clock came and went, and everything was dark when I opened the back gate and stepped out into the alley. I had to squeeze through sideways. Less than 3 feet high, the gate had been cleverly camouflaged in the corner of the fence so as to be undetectable from the outside. The alley emerged from the night, illuminated as always by the cold white light of the mercury lamp in the garden of May Kasahara's house. I clicked the gate shut and slipped down the alley. Through one fence after another, I caught glimpses of people in their dining rooms and living rooms, eating and watching TV dramas. Food smells drifted into the alley through kitchen windows and extractor fans. One teenage boy was practicing a fast passage on his electric guitar with the volume turned down. In a second floor window, a tiny girl was studying at her desk, an earnest expression on her face. A married couple having a heated argument sent their voices out into the alley. A baby was screaming. A telephone rang. Reality spilled out into the alley like water from an overfilled bowl, as sound, as smell, as image, as plea, as response. I wore my usual tennis shoes to keep my steps silent. My pace could be neither too fast nor too slow. The important thing was not to attract people's attention, not to let that reality pick up on my passing presence. I knew every corner, every obstacle. Even in the dark, I could slip down the alley without bumping into anything. When I reached the back of my house, I stopped, looked around, and climbed over the low wall. The house crouched in the darkness like the shell of a giant animal. I unlocked the kitchen door, turned on the light, and changed the cat's water. I took a tin of cat food from the cupboard and opened it. Mackerel heard the sound and appeared from nowhere. He rubbed his head against my leg a few times, then started to tear into his food. While he was eating, I took a cold beer from the refrigerator. I always had supper in the residence, something that Cinnamon had prepared for me, and so the most I ever had here was a salad or a slice of cheese. Drinking my beer, I took the cat on my knees and confirmed his warmth and softness with my hands. Having spent the day in separate places, we both confirmed the fact that we were home. Tonight, however, when I slipped my shoes off and reached out to turn the kitchen light on, I felt a presence. I stopped in the darkness and listened, inhaling quietly. I heard nothing, but I caught the faint scent of tobacco. There was someone in the house, someone waiting for me to come home. Someone